we were enmeshed in these stories, these ongoing stories of the land bases in which we live. I think humans have an instinct for religion. I think we have an instinct for meaning too. When we look at random dots, I remember doing this as a child all the time. I would look up at the ceiling and I would construct stories from the spackling, and I would construct a mystery and then I would solve it. And then the same thing with stars. And I think that's what we do when we look at something. We're assembling meaning out of what we see, because we see these various, you can see over here the green and then the black, and your mind assembles that into the picture it is of a tree leaf, a tree frond, whatever that is, a plant frond. And I think we have, sort of on a larger scale, I think we have the same sort of need for religion. And I didn't used to think this, and I've sort of come to this backwards. I've done it through sort of a reverse engineering, because one of the things that's blown me away is like postmodernism, the religious fervor that comes with it, the postmodernism is really a religion. So the other day I had an exchange about something else. Actually, somebody sent me an email with the subject header, Asian Civilization Produces an Achievement. And then that was ironic in a sense, because what it was about is how the biggest animal disease outbreak wave ever is a swine fever spread through Southeast Asia. And it's really a combination of, my response to his note was to say, this is horrible and of course completely expected. I don't understand how anyone who understands anything can't understand that crowded, unsanitary conditions combined with high mobility won't lead inevitably to anything other than contagious illness. And in fact, one of the first major things I ever had published was something in the New York Times Magazine back in 1995 or 1996. That was about how when you combine, it was about honeybees and how when you combine, the way the industry works, you can't expect anything other than highly contagious disease, because you bring in millions of honeybees to the Central Valley of California for almonds, whatever else, almonds, as I say in the region, and then you move them from there to North Dakota. And simultaneously, you have other beekeepers going from Florida for the winter up to North Dakota. So basically within two sets of moves, you've transferred a disease from California up to South Dakota, down to Florida, and everywhere in between. And so I don't understand. And what I wrote back in 1996 or whatever was that this is just an inevitable result of this sort of combination of monocrop, tightly packed, and high mobility. And of course, we see the same thing applies to humans. And now this talk we're having does not have to do really with disease, has to do with his response, which he responded, it's because most folks operate from a religious perspective. Evidence not needed. God will take care of it. They don't go from empirical observation relying on arguments. And that applies to postmodernism. It applies to queer theory. There is this religious fervor too that comes with it. Something that horrifies me that I'd like to devote an entire one of these to sometime is I've seen some women post things on Facebook about how sex that requires basically how sadistic sex, to use the word sadism, how choking a woman during sex can be harmful. And the responses by the proponents, both male and female, of those sexual activities are vicious and overwhelming. And you have, when anybody who speaks out against BDSM in any way at this point gets flooded with a mob of people, outraged people. And it's a religious fervor. It's as though you had gone to a conference of Seventh-day Adventists and said that Ellen G. White was not a prophet. And so sort of reverse engineering, it's just, it's been, and same with science. So science is a very good way to find out certain pieces of information, yes. And then there is scientism, which is sort of a belief in science as religion. You see it with atheists too, that atheists don the mantle of atheism with as much fervor and proselytization as the best Mormon missionaries around. And it slowly over the decades started to dawn on me through seeing, but we see the bright green people too, and the climate activists who keep insisting that solar will save the day, and it will, I mean, there is no harm from solar, and wind does not in fact kill birds and bats, and it's like the solar harvesting facilities grow on trees. They don't acknowledge. And if you say, you know, gosh, you know, hydrogen fuel cells actually don't make energy. They're just a form of battery. And in fact, there are lots of problems with them. They are toxic through their manufacture. If they turned all cars into them, they would require as much water as four Los Angeleses brought online. And if you happen to say that, they will come after you with pitchforks. It's so the interesting thing, and the point is not people coming after you. I mean, there are certainly things that I will come after people with pitchforks for too. My point is that I think it is that all of these end up, I'm coming to see, you know, all indigenous cultures have religions. They have spiritual beliefs. And it might not be in a single God. It might be in, you know, we've heard the phrase, the great mystery. There is a recognition of something larger. This takes us back to David Ehrenfeld's wonderful book, The Arrogance of Humanism, which, among many other things, posits that it's really incredibly arrogant to think that we can know everything, that we see, that's part of it, is the modern humanism is a religion too. And what it has done is it has swapped out this Old Testament God for humans, and humans are the new God, and technology is the new God. Technology is not something that, technology is not a set of tools we can choose to use or not. Technology is the be-all and end-all. Technology is the word. In the beginning was the technology, and the technology rules. It is, to switch metaphors here, it is the one ring to rule them all. And I think all of those are true, and all of those we can devote entire discussions to, but the one I want to hit right now is I just want to come back to sort of the central theme, is I think that we have, there's this great line by Joseph Campbell, which I'll find. There's a wonderful quote by Joseph Campbell that we've talked about before, and I just want to bring it into this discussion. This is from his Masks of God creative mythology book. For those in whom a local mythology still works, there's an experience both of accord with the social order and of harmony with the universe. For those, however, in whom the authorized signs no longer work, or if working, produce deepening effects, there follows inevitably a sense of both of dissociation from the local social nexus and a quest within without for life, which the brain will take to be for meaning. And the way that applies here is that Christianity provided a story for the West, and that story was destructive in many ways, but it was still a story. And I've talked elsewhere about how monotheism, Abrahamic religions, did the heavy lifting of removing meaning from the earth and putting it into a distant sky god, and then it just took the Enlightenment and science to take meaning away from the distant sky god out there, and all we're left with is nothing. They removed meaning from the world altogether. And this is one reason, you know, Carolyn Merchant wrote the book The Death of Nature about this removal of meaning from the earth itself. And if I think we were enmeshed in these stories, these ongoing stories of the land bases in which we live, in which trees would grow and then they would grow old and they would die, and we might see the death of one old tree and then we see other young trees coming up, and we were enmeshed in that larger story. There was this larger, here's what I'm trying to get at. I don't know that it's religion, but we have an instinctual need as deep and profound for embeddedness in a story, in an ongoing larger story that's as profound, if not as immediate, as our need for air and water. And to bring this back to postmodernism, those are all empty stories, yet we still, as a culture, cling to them. The point I'm trying to get at is, yes, we have an absolute need for stories. And it's Joseph Campbell's quote. And Joseph Campbell wrote that back in the 60s. And it was really, he could have written that in his book, The Hero of a Thousand Faces, which I believe was written in the 40s. At that point, he was talking about sort of the falling apart of the Christian stories and the Abrahamic stories. But what he's saying applies just as well today. You know, we've lost. Here's the point. The point is that when we separated ourselves from the land, we lost the narrative. And we are desperately searching for narratives. Here's what I'm getting at, is we have an instinctual need to find ourselves in a larger story. And literally, to find ourselves. To find ourselves in that story. And find ourselves in the telling of that story. And within the context of the ongoing moment by moment creation that is a land base, that story can be wondrous and fulfilling and heartbreaking as we each ascend the ladder, the last rung of which is that we ourselves die. And as we get older and get to the, or instead of ladder, we can talk about get to the front of the line, you know, that everyone precedes us on. And if that's in the context of an ongoing culture, you know, the Talawa who lived here for 12,500 years, and up until 300 years ago, up until 200 years ago, that was an infinite cyclical story that they could find themselves embedded in. And see, that's another part of the problem, is that in Beyond Geography, Frederick Turner talks about how when you have a linear story as opposed to a cyclical story, that's going to mess you up because life is cyclical. And so Christianity is basically a linear story. And so one of the points of that book is that when you have a linear progressive story, it cannot serve the psychic and social needs that are required to help a person move through the stages of life, because the stages of life are individually linear, but culturally and socially circular and cyclical. So getting back to the point, which is a very slippery one, the point is that, the take-home point is, I do believe we are instinctively driven to find a story to which we can devote our lives. And the question is, what are the effects of that story? And what are, is your story that you hitch your life to of technological progress? Is your story sort of the postmodern social justice warrior story that there is no material reality? You will have a religious fervor to some cause, whether that religious fervor is an insistence that you have no religious fervor or not, but you will have one. And the question becomes, what are the stories by which you will live your life? And when society is not giving them to you properly, you have to find the stories that will work.